There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Robbie Greenfield, how are you?
I am not that great.
No, oh. Okay.
I'm only going to be honest.
Yeah, wasn't the answer I was expecting.
Yeah. I'm feeling a bit man flu-y. And Chris is actually in much worse condition
Chris
than I am.
Chris is suffering, yeah.
Chris is really suffering, so we're kind of a bit contagious and a bit we're feeling a bit sorry for ourselves.
I'm glad you're that far away from me on the desk, Robbie, not going to lie.
Yeah, there's a nice distance between us, but I had a nice trip home and a nice break. And
did you get anything nice?
One or two bits and bobs.
Oh, yeah. Sounds a bit cagey. Your classic. Cagey.
Yeah, some nice socks and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, all the usual things you would expect. But no, it was really nice to be home and catch up with friends, family and all that kind of thing. So it was no rest for the wicked because I got back in the small hours, the wee small hours of the morning.
And then Abu Dhabi.
Straight down to Abu Dhabi for all the kind of build up to the Mubadala World Tennis Championship, which gets underway tomorrow. And there's been lots of chopping and changing going on down there because we've had some withdrawals on the men's side. No Stan, no Rafa. That was the big disappointment from the men's draw. Obviously the world number one needing a very small procedure, which has meant that he can't actually play in the event. But his health obviously is the most important thing as far as tennis fans are concerned, although it is a shame that you know, we had that prospect of potentially seeing the Novak Djokovic-Rafa Nadal rivalry continue in Abu Dhabi. Novak is here, so we haven't been in conversation with him yet. We've been talking to people who have, so looking forward to kind of bringing you all the kind of gossip on Novak. He's been, I think, you know... I suppose contemplating a lot about his career and his future goals during his time off and what he wants to achieve in the game. And I'm hearing that he is no less driven and hungry and ambitious as he always has been. So that's a big one to look out for. But the story that's dominated the entire tennis scene, not just the Mubadala Championship in Abu Dhabi, is the return of Serena Williams. I think that's what we're all looking forward to.
Now, I'm really glad you brought this up, Robbie, because it wasn't so long ago we were sat here talking about Serena and we were talking about how well she was doing. And, you know, you wondered if at her age and after having a baby, maybe this would be the end of it. And just to prove you wrong, she's decided to come back.
No, I didn't say it would be the end of it.
On your doorstep.
I did not say it would be the end of it.
Do you remember this conversation, Robbie?
What did I say again?
You were like, well, you know, she's had a baby now and she is getting on a bit and, you know,
let's find that clip. There is no way I did say that.
Do you not remember it? And Tim was like, stop digging. You're digging a hole. Stop digging.
I just said, my point was she's got nothing left to achieve in the game. So perhaps she'll want to do something else. I was just wondering. I didn't doubt the fact she could come back. I just thought maybe she'll want to go down another avenue. I don't know. But the fact is she is back. And, well, it's just an exhibition match. It should be pointed out that she's not playing in a... There's no tournament per se for the women, although that's something that they're thinking about for the future, which would be a great addition. She's going to play the Yelena Ostapenko, the French Open champion. So that one will take place on the Saturday. And we're really looking forward to it. What kind of form is she going to be in? Obviously, she gave birth in September. So, you know, she hasn't obviously played all that much tennis in the last couple of months. She's obviously started training and started hitting balls and getting back into her normal routine. So inevitably, since she hasn't played a competitive match since the Australian Open back in January of this year, so nearly a year's time, there will obviously be some rustiness. And the fact it is an exhibition means that whatever happens, however she plays, we shouldn't read anything into just this one-off match. But just to see her back and the fact that she's back in Abu Dhabi is a huge story for tennis. And the fact that she's going to try this year to tie and perhaps even pass the record of Margaret Court, 24 Grand Slams already in the Open era, on these surfaces she stands alone. But
hats off to her.
I'm delighted to see her back.
I think she was listening to Drive Live, maybe heard you say that, and decided if she was going to return to tennis this year it had to be.
I think you have many listeners. I do not think Serena Williams is one of them.
You never know. You never know. But great news. Possibly see her in action in Australia as well. And of course, Chris has been busy today.
Chris has also been busy. Chris has been at the Dubai International Sports Conference, where Well, he's been in his element, really. There's a lot of football chat going on at the sports conference, and I think the talking of the business of football and how various leagues are taking things forward, how some leagues, for example, Serie A over in Italy, are trying to bridge the gap between themselves and the Premier League and La Liga. Some interesting insight from the likes of Javier Tebas, the president of La Liga, on a recent decision to hold the El Clasico, the weekend just gone, the 1 p.m. local time kickoff, which obviously didn't go down too well with either sets of supporters because it's very early to get to a football game, but they're increasingly considering the global fan. And for these guys, the fan in East Asia is as important as the fan in you know, 10 minutes down the road from the stadium. So this is the way football is moving. It's increasingly globalized. It's very interesting to hear some of these guys, some of the brightest minds in football, and what they think about how things are going. He's also been talking, Chris has, to the Man City CEO, Ferran Soriano, a man who's obviously launching the City Football Group, and you know what incredible work they're doing to sort of, well, in the future, create a blueprint where they don't have to go and spend all this money on huge player transfers, because they have such a network of clubs under their kind of umbrella that they're able to sort of bring all the talent into this one central club, Manchester City. And it's going to be interesting how that develops, but there'll be plenty of conversations and interviews on Sports Tonight a little bit later on that one.
And switching to some cricket, and the Ashes, day two of the fourth test, and any better news for England?
Well, they finally turned up, Emma. So, you know, nice of them to finally make a showing. The Ashes is already done and dusted. I you know, for me personally, as an England cricket fan, very difficult to get excited about the Boxing Day test. Australia so one-sidedly winning the Ashes 3-0. But England have made a fist of this one. Australia had looked like they were set for a big score. David Warner made a century. Steve Smith, his usual customary good knock. He was out for 76. And, well, then they were skittled out for just, I think, 67 runs in their final seven wickets, which gave England a bit of impetus going into their first innings. So Australia all out for 327. England finally turn up to the party. First, Stuart Broad took four wickets. Where's he been, all Ashes? And then Alistair Cook, who we were all saying, retire. You've had a great career, but enough's enough. You're not making any runs anymore. Suddenly pops up with 104 not out. It made a century in the final over of the day. England captain Joe Root, one run shy of his half century. So England have reached a position where they're now 192 for two, and not for the first time in the Ashes. They're actually in the ascendancy in this match. But as we've seen in past matches, let's not read too much into this, because it could all change very, very quickly. And I think, you know, if England do go on to win this match, you will ask the question, where were these performances from the likes of Stuart Broad and Alistair Cook when the Ashes was on the line and when it really mattered?
It's almost like, well, there's nothing to lose. People are relaxing a little bit and getting into it, but that's not what they're paid for.
Exactly. And Australia weakened by the absence of Mitchell Starc as well. So, I mean, it is a dead rubber. It's a test match, but as far as the Ashes are concerned, this is a dead rubber. Australia are victorious. Don't get me wrong, they will want to win this 5-0 and emulate the performances of other teams in the recent past who have whitewashed England on the Ashes tour. But England will be trying to salvage some pride, and it should make for some good competition over the next couple of days at the very least.
Okay, we have to move to football, and you can't talk about the EPL with talking about Harry Kane, 24-year-old wonder man. You know, hat-trick last night, surpassing Alan Shearer's record. What more can we say about this man other than the interest from the likes of Barca, you know, inevitable?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, 56 goals in all competitions in 2017. I did ask Chris a little earlier, when did goals in a calendar year become a thing?
I don't remember that
ever being something that people talked about. But
well, I'll tell you what, Robbie, the oldest record goes back to 1994, which is when Alan Shearer had his. So they obviously started doing it when he got good at them. So Alan Shearer has it 94-95, and then we're waiting another few years before anyone gets anywhere near it. 2002, again Alan Shearer. For someone else that's not Alan Shearer, you're talking, oh, Les Ferdinand did all right, 30 goals.
So yeah. 39 for Harry Kane, and obviously, you know, his form for Tottenham is going to beg some questions as to, if you mentioned his future, whether some of the big clubs in Spain will consider a move for him. For me, he's not a Barcelona type player. Harry Kane is quite a traditional centre forward, and they don't tend to really utilise those kind of players at Barcelona. Real Madrid, obviously with their problems that they're having with Karim Benzema right now, and the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo, as amazing as he is not going to go on forever, yeah. And he's getting into his 30s now. So Harry Kane might be a target for them, but again, you always wonder how their form will translate into La Liga, and it's a lot of money to potentially spend on a player who has been amazing for Tottenham, but you do wonder, would he be equally as effective for a club like Real Madrid? I think he probably would, is the answer to that. And I'm sure there will be some overtures in the summer from some of the big clubs, because it's impossible to ignore the numbers. Yeah. He scored 2 hat-tricks in a row. He makes scoring a hat-trick look fairly routine.
Yeah.
And I should know that because he's been captain of my fantasy team for the last 2 weeks. So I was delighted to see Harry Kane bang the goals in. But great for him. Obviously, they were very impressive in beating Southampton 5-2. Liverpool, equally impressive, even not more so impressive, beating Swansea by 5-0. And, well, the key line that I'm taking out of this Boxing Day fixture, Manchester United coming back from 2-0 down against Burnley to salvage a 2-2 draw. Jose Mourinho, always one for a quote.
Yeah.
£300 million,
not enough.
Inverted commas, not enough, apparently, needs more. And he even had the audacity to suggest that Man City spend too much on players.
Yeah, well, it's very difficult for me to comment on this. I was sat at home last night and my mum, my uncle, they're both Red fans, and our close friend, Jane, she's a Burnley supporter.
Right.
So the texts were flying off in between these groups all evening, and it was looking pretty bad. And then obviously United pulled it back. But yeah, it's very difficult for me to comment on that.
What a job Sean Dyche is doing at Burnley, though.
Yeah,
they
fantastic.
Are punching above their weight, like you wouldn't
believe.
I think a lot
of people expected Burnley not to be able to survive.
Yeah,
so, you know.
I mean, selling some key players. They sold Michael Keane to Everton, and their team was expected to potentially struggle this year, and it's been anything but. So they've been excellent. Other results, Chelsea getting a win. I mean, there's a feel in the Premier League that already, even though we're only not even in 2018, that it's all just playing for top four, because
yeah.
Man City have got it in the bag.
Yeah.
And we shall see how that progresses. But no, good wins for Liverpool. Nice for them to keep a clean sheet. They'll be pleased with that. Jurgen Klopp will be delighted that his defenders did a job. As always, their attackers have been in sparkling form. And Philippe Coutinho, Firmino, 2 for him. Mo Salah with 2. They really are irresistible going forward. But solving that defensive conundrum for them will be the big thing in 2018.
Okay, Robbie, thank you very much for the sport.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.